Hey guys, this is Corey Parker, Supercoach God, and you are listening to the Supercoach Champions podcast.
Hello and welcome to the NRL Supercoach Champions podcast. I'm Joe Fitz. It's the first big bye week. Many of our carefully laid out plans are in tatters and just getting 13 players on the park might be a struggle, or at least it is for me. Joining me to talk us through whether it's the size of your squad that counts or what you do with it, it's Wilf.
It's definitely what you do with it. That's what I've been
Reliably informed.
Yeah, reliably informed. So yeah, let's run with that. Quality over quantity. As they say.
Yeah, something like that. Well, I'm hoping that's the case, mate, because my numbers are looking a little bit dire this week.
Yeah, look, I think that's something it's probably on everyone's mind, you know, what numbers are sufficient. So we'll no doubt dive into that. But as always, we're going to start off with a bit of number crunching. So let's get stuck into that. All right, so firstly, thank you to our friend Carl McGrath Accountant for sponsoring the segment Crunching the Numbers. If you do want to make sure you're not fudging your numbers when it comes to your taxes, get Carl to help you out. So for this week, I've kind of been working through different positions, but something that I've been seeing a lot is, halfback, right? We've been so settled with Nicho Hynes and Nathan Cleary. I think the vast majority of the people up the pointy end are running with that combo. There were a few that took the punt on ditching Cleary a bit early and moving to a Moses or whatever, but they're probably not as much at the pointy end potentially, or maybe they've bounced back if they were patient with Moses, who duly delivered on those who trusted him to come good. But yeah, I wanted to look at, well, if you were exploring the idea of trading out a Nicho Hynes or a Nathan Cleary over this origin period, you know, which way you might go. So first and foremost, I'm not looking at this. I'm pretty set on just sticking with Nicho and Cleary myself. I tend to think Nathan's going to try back up where he can. I'm pretty sure he's conscious of the fact that he doesn't have a Dally M to his name yet, and that might come into his considerations in how many games he's going to play. On top of that, I think with Nicho, he's also obviously just on the bench at the moment, so assuming he plays limited minutes, there's little reason that he's not backing up for the Sharks, I would assume, for the following round. So that's kind of how I'm seeing it. I mean, would you see otherwise?
No, I think that plays perfectly if you're the Nicho and Cleary owner, as we both are. I think that's probably the logical, kind of playing the percentages play. But, as you said, there are, Mitch Moses owners there that moved off of Cleary a couple of weeks ago as a bit of a calculated risk. You're not going to win Supercoach by playing the percentages every single week. You've got to pick your lanes and when you want to break away from that. So, I mean, Moses rewarded owners with 130 last week, but, if you're looking to pivot to him now, 758K. Break-even of 87 is kind of irrelevant. He does miss next week, but he's one of the more popular trade-ins for the week, interestingly. SJ, though, that's a fascinating one. Obviously, a lot cheaper, just shy of 600K. But, he's been averaging 69, which is pretty nice.
Very nice.
We'll gain a little bit of money this week, but obviously fun to watch as well. And we presume he's going to do well against a kind of depleted Broncos side. But it does strike me as pretty short-term thinking, mate.
I think it comes down to how many games you do think those other two guys are going to play, right? So looking at the Panthers by scheduling and obviously depending on how many games Nathan Cleary backs up in, I think, we can all run our own narratives and work out how many games we think they'll play and whatever. So I lean towards Nathan most likely playing most games, and then he'll probably miss, I would assume, round 20 and have that, once the Origin series is over, we'll have that break and then come back for the run home. So that's how I'm rolling with it. Now with Nicho, though, the thing with him is because now originally he was going to cover round 16 and 19 because the Sharks have that good bye coverage, but with him not playing those two rounds, plus the Sharks having the bye in round 17, that means from 16, 17, and 19, he only plays the one game in 4 weeks. So there is that little period there where I think trading out Nico is probably more viable, whereas I tend to think he's going to show up for around 14 and 15, albeit against the Broncos and the Storm for those two matchups. So, look, the trade out is there.
On paper, I think it is, mate. And I think, though, if there's no top 17 in any realistic or serious Supercoach players team where Nico isn't in it, you know, for the run home. So it's one thing to have a plan, a 4-week plan to move off of Nico and then move back. But I mean, what were your plans 4 weeks ago for round 13? I'm guaranteeing you they're absolutely nothing like what they are this week. I know mine certainly aren't. You know, we talked just before we were recording about Lachie Miller, and I brought Burbo in last week. I mean, best laid plans with Supercoach. So, you know, yes, it's a 4-week plan for Nico, but you have to have him in your final 17 or in your team for the run home. And that's risky when he's not there.
Absolutely. And the terrifying thing is round 18, the one game he plays in that 4-week period is against the Dragons. And I think we don't need to remind, especially those who didn't have Nico in their squad at the start of the year, what he scored against the Dragons the first time around. So, yeah, I think that's the scary part, isn't it? So, look, coming back to the options, if you look at the halfback position, I mean, the only reason we're only talking about Sean Johnson and Mitch Moses is there's, you know, the next best options are Daly, Sherry Evans and Ben Hunt, who are obviously playing, you know, Origin. Then you've got Matt Burton. But that it's like a sizable gap. You know, Nico's averaging 100. Nathan Cleary's averaging 88.1. And then you're already dropping to SJ at 69, as you say, and Mitch Moses slightly below that at 68. So it's such a massive drop. And then, you know, you keep going and they're in the 50s after DCE and Hunt. So I'm almost saying, look, there's no point looking further beyond these two. Especially the fact is that SJ and Moses, they both have good buy schedules, which is why I think it is viable to look at them, because on averages, they're not going to play as many games. But if, let's say, they do hit their averages over the next few weeks, they may play enough additional games over a Cleary or a Hines to justify jumping down towards it. Plus, especially with SJ, you're freeing up a fair bit of coin because he's, as you say, just shy of 600 grand. So, you know, you're getting almost 300 grand trading Cleary to him and about 260. 270 for trading Hines down to SJ. So that to me is, you know, it's not just obviously the trade itself, but also the money, what you do with the other money that you free up, right? So
yeah, if you've got a busted cow, you know, there's people with, again, Ben Trbojevic, with, you know, Max Finai, that'd be me, and Franklin Pelle, guys like that, Dave Mowali, that you know, just sitting there kind of rotting on your bench, not contributing. So if you can spend that kind of 250, 300K to upgrade to someone, a mid-ranger that's playing 13 or has a good buy schedule, then I can see the argument for it. But, I mean, you're eating 30-plus points from Nico down to either SJ or Mitch Moses on averages and 20 from Cleary. I can see the short-term thinking on it, but, again, you've got to have a pretty bulletproof plan to bring these guys back in.
Yeah, because it's hard to obviously trade these guys back in when you have to spend up, you know, 800 to 900K to get him. I mean, everyone who brought in Nico late knew how painful that was, and I needed a boost to be able to do it. So certainly it's going to be pretty scary there.
A lot of people are either out of boost or only have one boost. You're out. I've got one. It's not just the plan to bring them in. It's the multiple weeks of culling cash cows to build the bank to bring them back in, which has also got to be part of your plan as well. And when you're talking buy period, I'm assuming those kind of cash cows, you've kept them around, or mid-rangers, you've kept them around to actually play the buy weeks. So then you're talking 2 to 3 weeks after the origin period finishes before you're getting your final team sorted, and all of a sudden that 20, 30 points per game starts blowing out into something serious.
Yep. So you're really needing, like, especially if you're pivoting to an SJ or a Moses, you need to be able to hold their value in order to justify being able to, you know, it may not be as painful if Moses, let's say, stays at 750K, then, you know, you might be able to jump up 100K to do that. So that's more viable. If SJ doesn't really move from 600K, you have to be so careful with the 250, 300 grand that you've freed up by downgrading to him. In you know, if he makes 100 grand, that obviously makes it easier. But yeah, that's the risk in itself. But breaking down the numbers between these two, they've both played 11 games so far. Obviously, SJ has had one bye, and Moses has missed one game due to concussion protocols. Now, there was that one game where Moses scored 17 in 74 minutes, but you know, you might point to, well, he got knocked out at the end, therefore he, you know, you call it an injury-affected score, but the way that game was going, he wasn't making it past 20, basically. So,
and it was against the Titans as well. Yeah, it wasn't the Storm, wasn't the Rabbitohs, it was the Titans.
Yep. And, you know, he goes 130 against the Rabbitohs, of course. So I think that's the, you know, I'm not treating it as an injury game, basically. I'm attributing it basically as a full 80-minute game. But you look at the base and base attack numbers, there's like, you know, 15, 20 points between them. Hardly anything across the season. You look at their goal kicking numbers. I mean, the fact is Moses is a better goal kicker and the Eels are scoring more points. So he's got better numbers there. But then you look at, you know, what the Warriors have been doing. And one thing that they've been very patient in, that they've been, you know, getting through their sets, high completions, lots of repeat sets. And SJ has, I mean, he's got almost double the number of forced dropouts over Moses. So that's one area where he's doing quite well in. But then otherwise, like, the try assists are pretty much, they're identical. Moses has scored two tries more than SJ. SJ has far more try contributions and a lot more line break assists. So that's pretty much why their averages are almost identical. So there's really not much between them, yet SJ's 150, 160 grand cheaper than Moses because of obviously these spike games that Moses has had to blow out his price tag. So I don't think there's a numbers issue basically between the two. It's just got to come down to, I mean, do you trust Sean Johnson to stay healthy and to continue the form that he's been in for the Warriors as well as obviously for himself? And for Moses, do you trust him to actually maintain his value and not have one of those 20-point games, sub-20-point games, to tank his cash value and make it really hard to be able to upgrade him to a Nickel or a Cleary when you do eventually trade out Moses later in the season?
Yeah, I mean, it is remarkable that they're within a point of each other with their average prices, given the volatility of Moses. I think, you know, situationally, SJ's the man, the Warriors. Whoever the 5'8's going to be, it's been a revolving door, is going to be the junior partner. But like the Parramatta game against the Titans, where it was Dylan Brown taking a dominant hand, there's going to be times when, you know, Parramatta's a more explosive offense, but Moses will take a back seat. And that's where you get 17 points in 74 minutes. But, you know, Dillbags can be the junior member the next week. So, yeah, Moses is more volatile. And as we've said, with the score against South, score against Titans, you can't really pick it based on matchup, can you?
No, and that's the tough thing, because normally Moses, you could reliably count it. You know, he's known to be a bit of a flat track bully, but this year already we've seen him, you know, it's not as reliable as before. So yeah, it's a tough one. I think, you know, there's nothing in the numbers that are really going to push you either way. So yeah, good luck deciding on that one. But if you do want to stick with the reliable numbers, you get in touch with Carl, as tax time is fast approaching. Carl can help you with your tax return. And he'll make sure legally that you maximize your tax refund, whether it's just a basic tax return or accounting for things like rental properties, capital gains, or on share trading or crypto trading even. Carl can help you out and record everything correctly. There is no job that's too big or too small. So whether it's a small individual tax return right through the businesses, run through companies, partnerships, or trusts, Carl can help you out. And being a small business owner himself, he has very few overheads, so he can pass on the savings to his clients. So we want to remind you again, Carl's got that ongoing special for Supercoach Champions podcast listeners of $99 for a basic tax return, or otherwise he'll make sure he looks after you price-wise if you have more than a basic tax return to submit. And just a final reminder for those in the Listener League or not in the Listener League yet, for Carl, if you're one of his current clients, get in touch, because the prize is a free basic tax return or equivalent discount on you know, your more complicated tax return there. So make sure you jump into that league. But that's enough number crunching. We'll jump over to captaincy now.
Good morning, Captain.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the captain speaking.
Aye, aye, Captain.
I'm Captain Jack Sparrow. Savvy.
So one thing we do need to dive into a little bit more before we start talking actual captaincy, it's something if you read the rules a little bit closer, and maybe it's the the legal training in myself where I do read the terms and conditions and make sure all the, you know, all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted.
You're great fun at parties, mate.
So best 13 scoring. So again, this is for rounds 13, 16 and 19. You only score from your best 13 players in any position from your selected on-field starting 17. So I've had people ask me, you know, do you get like AEs and stuff like that? Don't worry. Just pick your starting 13. So obviously you're going to have all your same positions in your normal 13 starters, and pick four reserves, even if they're on the bye or not. Just make sure you got 17 selected. That's the simplest way to do it. Now, it doesn't matter that you don't have a hooker or you don't have a halfback or you don't have a fullback. You're still going to get your best 13 scorer, so you're not going to get any AEs or anything like that. So that's probably the first thing I will say. Now, it does go on to say that if you set a captain and a vice captain as you normally would, this is where you got to be careful. So if your captain's doubled score is not in your best 13 scores, then their points will not count and you only get your best 13 scores only. It doesn't automatically double your vice captaincy. So that's one thing that's really important to note. That means, you can still loop, but you have to make sure that your captain doesn't take the field. So it has to be someone that is on the bye or is playing Origin or is injured, basically. Because if you captain someone else who scores, 10 or whatever and isn't in your best 13 scores, then you're going to not get a captaincy doubled, basically, for that round. Now, this is all irrelevant if you don't have 13 or more players, right? So not everyone's going to have this to deal with, but I just...
And even if you do have 14 or 15, you have majorly gone wrong if the guy you've chosen with the armband isn't in your top 13 scorers. Something bad's happened.
Yeah, well, pretty much this is in the case of, well, your captain just got knocked out or they've done their ACL after the first 10 minutes.
Has that ever happened to you, Wolf?
Why? It's happened multiple times. Sammy Burgess scored sub 20 after he, hurt his shoulder. Kalen Ponga got knocked out. Oh, no, he did his hammy when he was on 5. Like, I could keep going. I can rattle off all these scores.
Ryan Pappenhausen a magic round. Oh, that was delicious.
It hurts the soul. Like, it stays with you. Sammy Burgess was from 2016. Kalen Ponga was from 2018. I still remember them. Yeah. Anyway, why? I don't know why you had to drive by and just hit me like that.
That's what I'm here for, mate.
So, like, strategically, before we even talk about players, I almost think that if you actually nail your vice captaincy and they score like an 80 or something, if you've got more than 13, there is merit to maybe just locking that in. I kind of feel that it might be worthwhile looking at that, right? If it's something that you're on a normal buy round, before there was all this best 13 chat, it might have been worthwhile, locking that in. Like, let's say last year, if someone scored 90 points, a lot of people would have just looped that automatically on the buy round. So you might still have that kind of approach with your vice captaincy. That's the only thing I would say that, again, only applies if you've got 14 or more players for this round.
Yeah, I mean, only 13 scorers instead of 17 means expresses a percentage. Your captaincy score is going to have an outsized impact on your overall score, right? So, yeah, it is more important in these big buy rounds to nail it where you can. And I think the smart play is to take the safe option.
Yep, so let's talk about, you're still obviously going to need to put the vice captaincy, the blue armband on someone who plays early in the round. So, looking at the matchups, that's the Dolphins players against the Dragons. Now, I don't know how many Dragons players you've got, but I've only got Ben Murdoch-Masilla, and I'm not putting the armband on him, so.
He's starting.
Yeah. Oh, look, I'm cheering that, honestly, but... Yeah, he's not going to score that well. So I think, if you've got a Jermaine Asako or Lemulu, Jeremy Marshall King, any of those guys, I think they're worthy of a vice captaincy. Again, if the Dolphins obviously are comfortable winners, then as the odds might indicate at this point in time. But look, I think there's a more interest in the second game where there's lots of Parramatta players for us and, you know, a few Cowboys players potentially. But, you know, Dylan Brown is the name that really jumps out, right? He's probably the guy that you would back to probably hit, you know, 80, 90 plus, if not triple digits like he has the last couple of weeks. So I definitely think he needs to be, and I think he will be very popular for the vice captaincy. Is it viable to look at a Jermaine Hopgood or someone like that?
Yeah, there's two ways I can go. My challenge is that I don't have any Dolphins or Dragons. So it means that my Parramatta guys are the first, you know, VC candidates. Unfortunately, my kind of other big captaincy candidates, Cody Walker, and obviously you can't VC and C5-8. So back to the chat we were having before around Moses, if you did pivot to Moses, I would only do that in the capacity of a VC because he's more rocks and diamonds. Dillbag's obviously a bit more of a solid proposition. So if you've got a Dolphin or a Dragon that you like, feel more confident about putting the armband on Dylan Brown. But again, we know he's certainly got triple figures in him. And with that forward pack, you know, Jermaine Hopgood, if we're talking about, you know, going kind of slow and steady for your captaincy option, you could do a lot worse than him as well.
Well, I was just looking at that team, right? Do we think Hopgood's playing at least 65 plus, maybe even the full 80? Surely it's you know, likely, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's Brad Arthur, yeah. But yes, logically, yes, he should.
Very good point. And you look at his scores then when he's played at least 65 plus minutes, right? So he does have a 61 in there, but his next lowest score is a 77. You know, and obviously he's got the 101, 124, and 109. So there is a little bit of ceiling there. So I do think Hopgood is quite a good VC option. Again, if you don't have like a Dylan Brown or a Mitch Moses who probably would take precedence, or like as you say, if you've got a Cody Walker that you want to put the armband on instead, being a little bit more risky on that obviously, but at the same time, you know, that is still a pretty good matchup for the Rabbitohs with the Raiders still, you know, it's not so much Origin, it's just obviously the injuries, sorry, that are hitting them.
And Manly nearly put 50 on them at home, so
yes that's fair. To not ignore the Warriors and the Broncos game, the Broncos obviously quite depleted Origin-wise and some injuries as well. The Warriors are still, you know, they've got some injuries themselves, but a lot of their big names are present. Obviously, SJ, for starters, I think he could be a viable vice-captaincy option if you wanted to look at that. I do think Fenua Blake is a good chance of scoring yet again. And, you know, when he does that, he's putting up decent numbers and,
I mean, a lazy five-round average of 90,
yep,
for a front row.
Hard to argue with that, and even Tohu Harris obviously in the mix as well for, you know, maybe like if you want a more steady, more likely option of hitting, you know, 70, 80 plus, but assuming he makes it through the game obviously. So I think that's all viable as well. The final game, the Knights and the Seagulls. I mean, Ruben Garrick is the name for the Seagulls that a lot of us would have. Not too keen on captaining him, right? Just he's not playing fullback for starters, and
this just has a feel of a Newcastle win. Obviously, Manly played really well;
they should win,
yeah. but obviously, they've still got a lot of injuries. No Turbo, no DCE. They're a completely different side. I mean, this feels like a Ponga game if you really, really, really want to roll the dice. And you know, for the people who bought Ponga in, I think he's a great captaincy option. Maybe Marju a little bit less, although he's running at Manly's kind of weaker defensive side. So, I mean, you could definitely do worse than Knights. But, I mean, just if we're just going on which team is most favoured to win and therefore, you know, put a lot of points on, only the Eels have better odds, you know, to win than the Knights do. So,
yep,
you know, the betting market is pretty heavily in the Knights' favour.
Yeah, definitely. And look, as you pointed out, obviously the Seagulls are missing not just their two most potent attacking players, but also one of their most inspirational leaders on field, Jake Trbojevic. So, I mean, Ben Trbojevic, right? No.
Tom Trbojevic. Tom. All three of
one
them.
One of them. Yeah. Look, they are missing them. And I don't know what's going on with Josh Schuster. He's putting out cryptic Instagram posts and stuff like that, talking about minor setbacks, but just keep an eye on that. I think he's meant to play, but it's always nervous when he's talking about setbacks. And yeah, I don't get it. Like when you win 42 to whatever the Raiders scored and then your post is minor setback? I don't know.
Might have been diet related and he finally broke and started smashing triple quarter pounders again.
Yeah, hopefully it's not that. Hopefully it's not an injury, but something to keep an eye out for anyway. Don't recommend him as a captaincy option regardless, despite the last start 100. But yeah, look, I think there's not really any other options. I mean, if you want to get a little bit frisky, you can go with the wingers like a Marju or an AJ or someone like that. I don't mind those as, you know, you're just counting on them to score a couple of tries. I mean, if you've got like a Mike Acevo, you know, that's already a pod that you've got for this round. I don't know if you really want to, you know, double down and go with, you know, hoping they score a double or a hat trick for a genuine captaincy score. So I would probably stick with the playmakers in those situations.
Yeah, I think, again, your captain is going to score a larger percentage of your overall points this week because it's only 13 scoring players. I mean, I just think the riskier option needs to be the VC. I know that is the case usually anyway, but, you know, looking at your Sivos and your high-ceiling guys, VC them, and if they you know, crap the bed, then have something a bit more reliable with the armband on to back you up.
Yeah, well said. All right, I think we've covered this in way too much detail. Let's take a quick break. Big thanks to our friends over at Manscaped for sponsoring this episode. If you didn't already know, the global leaders in below-the-waist grooming aren't just going gold this season, they're going platinum. You heard that right. Manscaped has taken their signature performance package 4.0 to the moon with their upgraded platinum package. With products ranging from shower goods to ball care, this is their sleekest, sexiest, and smoothest bundle yet. It's time to go platinum and join the 8 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping using the code CHAMPIONS. We talk all the time on this podcast about making sure you have a good routine to work through in terms of your processes and decision-making when it comes to Supercoach. Sometimes you just got to have the confidence to back the gut, to trust your instincts and make those bold calls that might fly in the face of all logic. The Manscaped Platinum Package 4.0 is the one-stop shop for the man who deserves it all. A package unlike any we've had before. So whether you're a new or seasoned Manscaped vet, there is something for you. Inside the Platinum Package 4.0, you'll find their Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, brand new Weed Whacker 2.0 ear and nose hair trimmer, ultra premium body wash, ultra premium 2-in-1 shampoo and conditioner, ultra premium deodorant, crop preserver anti-chafing ball deodorant, crop reviver ball spray toner, anti-chafing boxes, and the shed travel bag to hold your goods while traveling. This platinum package really does cover all bases, starting from the actual shaving and trimming to upgrading your shower routine, and then there's the post-shower routine and on-the-go maintenance to keep your skin and hair feeling hydrated and smelling fresh at all times. Plus, Manscaped even threw in two free gifts to their Platinum Package 4.0, the Manscaped boxes and the shed travel bag. This package truly covers all bases from head to toe, the best bang for your shebang. So get 20% off and free shipping using the code CHAMPIONS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code CHAMPIONS. Get a taste of the finer things in life with Manscaped.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
Okay, so some strategy chat, Wilf. We've gone pretty deep on quite a few things here. I think the big question a lot of people want to know is, you know, particularly using their final boosts and how many trades and all that stuff is what's par? How many people are you expecting to run out on average this week?
I think this all ultimately comes down to how highly you're ranked. There are a lot of teams up near the top that don't seem to have, you know, they don't seem like they're going to be able to get 13 on the park, basically. The one that stands out, I think it's seventh, currently seventh place, and definitely won't be seventh after this round because I think they have like three players basically that will run out this week. Yeah, it's pretty gross. So you can safely assume they're going to crash sooner rather than later. Yeah, I think they've got like Herbie, they've got Garrick and Dylan Brown. Those are the only round 13 guys they've got currently because everyone else is playing Origin.
I mean, there's a lot of talk, and we covered this in the pod earlier in the season, of thinking of round 13 and 14 as almost the same as a combined round. For that reason, I've, until the last couple of weeks, I've actually had no eels. staying away from that, and only Schuster and Garrick there. So I'm actually looking great for round 14. But for me, I've using the three trades that I've got planned, it only gets me up to 12 this week. Now, that's a pretty good 11, and then Tom Arley is my 12th. But I'm just haven't felt like I really needed to break my team to get kind of more than 14 to take advantage of that best 13 rule.
Yeah, and I guess just to come back to, I think if you can get somewhere around 10, and, you know, mostly 10 quality guys, I don't think you're going to crash too hard on the rankings, and you still might be a good chance of, you know, maintaining or pushing up. So I guess if you're defining par as what do you need to be able to hold steady, then somewhere around 10 or 11 is probably my gut feeling. I think if you want to guarantee yourself moving up, you're going to need at least 13. And, you know, like if you're 12th and 13th, guys like Tom Arley for yourself, or I've got Ben Murdoch-Masilla, you know, Jared Croker, Josh Schuster, these are my, you know, my fringe guys. The rest of my team, I've got, you know, Tarpanay, Torhu Harris, Hopgood, Dillbags, Cody Walker, Lemulu, AJ, and Garrick, and, you know, two more guys that I haven't decided who I'm bringing in. So I will have 13, most likely, at the end of my two trades or maybe three trades where I haven't quite decided. But this is where I wanted to get a little bit more into the strategy of this. Because, you know, there are other people who, you know, pre-trades, let's say they've got 11 already, right? So they can make two trades of the possible three you can make this round, and that could get them to the 13. You know, I've seen some nice strategies out there. Like their 13th is someone like an Isaiah Katoa, right? Someone who plays in the first round, first game of the round. So you could viably see what Katoa scores. Let's say he bombs, like he gets hooked like he did last round, and only plays 15 minutes, scores another 7. Is it then a viable strategy to go, all right, that's my 13th score, I don't like that, I'm going to use my third trade that I haven't used, I wasn't planning to use necessarily, and I'm going to bring in someone else to hopefully score 50 or 60 and replace Katoa's score in my 17. And look, maybe it's someone that can also play next round as well. So you're also bolstering your team moving forward. So you're not just getting, you know, some random scrub or whatever, like you're actually getting a viable player that may form part of your 17 moving forward.
Yeah, and we've kind of chatted about this as well, and I do think that's a classic win the battle but lose the war strategy. I mean, the best thing about Supercoach is that it's a months-long journey with twists and turns. It's over 27 weeks for us, and that kind of strategy is the kind of thing that reminds me more of your head-to-head semi-finals or grand finals, where it's an edge case move where you know in case one guy really craps the bed, then you've got this move up your sleeve to kind of gazump an opponent. But if you're playing overall, you've got 140 odd thousand opponents, and you know you're not really, you're gazumping yourself if you're kind of making suboptimal decisions like that. I think a trade, you need to value a trade more than 30, 40 points maybe in a bye week.
Yep, I think that's a very valid point. I guess it can kind of go into like what is exactly that trade, right? Like I said, if it's someone that actually strengthens not just this week, but actually you now can use moving forward, that might be something that's viable. Let's say you weren't planning to, you know, like just hypothetically thinking off the top of my head, let's say you've got like a Franklin Pele, you know, pretty much useless, just going to rot away. Potential AE nightmare if he's in the 17. He's obviously not at the moment, and he's on the bye this round. Let's say because you've got, let's keep that Isaiah Katoa option, or, you know, someone scored a sub 10 score, right? And you decide with your extra trade, maybe I can see Samuel Ifeanyi is starting. He's bottom dollar. Maybe I can go Pele to Ifeanyi, and he might make some cash over the coming weeks. Might even survive to round 16 as well and give you extra points there. So I kind of think there are very specific trades that you could consider. It's no longer just the extra 30, 40 that you get this round. Maybe it's 30, 40 this round, and then he gives you another 20 in round, you know, maybe 30 in round 16 as well. Makes a little cash on the way. It gets to a point where it might actually be worthwhile to roll that extra trade out. But I think, yeah,
the edge cases, I think the you know, as you're talking, the one player that probably popped out to me, and the unfortunate thing is he plays in the first game. If he played in the last game, and I'm obviously talking about Valence Tafare, if Branko was out and you've had a player, you know, really underperform and this guy gets a start, obviously he's going to be bolted on for a good score, as we've seen him play. Hopefully maybe some job security if he puts another solid performance together as a good cash cow, then I can see it. But the likes of Finu and these kind of guys that, again, some of the best cheapy options we've had in recent weeks have been players like Max Finai, Tyrell Sloan, you know, Burbo. It's been pretty slim pickings on the ground. So there's every chance Finu might turn out to be a guy like that as well, and in which case you've not only wasted one trade, you've probably wasted two because you've got to move him out as well.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess with Finu, I do think he's got a little bit of job security because, you know, there's like four injuries ahead of him, and some of them are long-term, like Jake and Ben, Talangi already as well. So he's competing with other guys that are just not there. And you might think maybe like once Eloy comes back from his injury, I think it's meant to be around 14 or something like that, like maybe that puts a little bit of risk there, but like he's still a middle, right? So the fact with the Seagulls, they're just so short on edge back roles that I kind of do feel he's you know, in with a shot. The only thing I can say is like, what if Seabold decides to go Bullamore as a starting edge and finally goes back to the bench, which is the risk you'd run. But, you know, we're getting into semantics now, basically. So
for sure. Finally might be worth a stab in the dark.
If you had to. So the other way I was looking at is, well, what if you use that third trade? Because, like, for example, if you got someone like me out of boost, round 13 with three trades available, it's almost like I've got a boost again. It feels like it. So, you know, is it viable then to take a bit of a risk? Let's say I've got myself to 13 with my first two trades. Do I look at using my third trade on getting a head start on planning for round 14 coverage, knowing I'm going to have some guys out, knowing I'm going to have, you know, potential origin guys not backing up, and getting a head start also on round 16 coverage? So, you know, just example, someone like a Jacob Carraz comes to mind, who very reasonably priced earlier in the season was absolutely awesome. You know, he's now getting 2 weeks off to continue to recover from that dodgy knee that he's rushed back from. So, you know, is that a bit of a viable move or is it too risky?
It's pretty risky. I mean, in the extremely unlikely scenario where you're completely out of boost but you somehow save trades, then maybe. But look, you know, you bring up a Doggies player that is carrying an injury. Like, I would not be sure that they're not going to get injured at training. Look at Luke Thompson, look at Viliami Kikau, like these guys, long-term injuries at training. It's not a kind of baked-in thing that these guys won't get hurt, you know, before the next bye round. So again, minimal risk. I'm obviously kind of a bit tongue in cheek there as the Doggies fan, but why risk it? You know, I just think that surely you can't be that bad off in round 14 that you have to make this trade. Obviously these things are hugely team dependent, but again, I would steer away from it unless you're one of those edge cases.
Yeah. I tend to agree. It's not a risk you really need to take. But there are certain teams where you've planned really well for round 13, but you know, the reason you've got 13 for this round is because you've got heaps of Eels, Knights and Seagulls, in which case you do maybe need to use one of your extra trades to get a head start on making sure you've got coverage. And, you know, you only get two trades next week if you've got no boost. So if that doesn't get you to a full 17 or, you know, 17, if your 17th player is Sonny Luke, then maybe you want to try somehow pad it out that you play someone else or whatever, like that might be something.
Look, and that is, to be fair, that's probably more likely than I was kind of suggesting before, right? Because people have steered really hard into particularly Manly and Power players. But I mean, I guess you would think that if you have steered really hard, you've probably got a Lockie Miller there that you can move on this week anyway. But if you don't, then there's a chance you could look at someone like that. And I mean, Carraz is the kind of guy that is priced right. And if it's centre wing that you're looking to target, that could be a good option as well.
Someone else that comes to mind would be someone like an Elisa Katoa, but he's obviously got that shoulder injury that injury cloud hanging over him, which is less than ideal. Had he not gone off hurt last round, I think I would feel a little more confident, looking at him as a potential go early option if you wanted to play that way. But the final question I want to ask is, where's the sweet spot, right? So let's say you do want to pick up an extra eel or a seagull, thinking you're going to get that round 13, 16 or 13, 9 in coverage or something like that, but they're on the bye next round. So how many of the, eels, seagulls, knights players can you actually have this round?
I honestly think the top end is 5. And I know people might go with that, but if you think about it, that's 5 automatically that you won't have next week. That takes you down to 20. You've got to think there's at least one injury, if not another, not backing up for round 14 out of Origin. And then you're into your Sonny Lukes, your Bendra Boyoviches, who's obviously injured anyway, but your Franklin Pelés, your kind of guys that the absolute last thing you want to do is rely on them for their 15 points or 14 points in the week. So, and I know there's going to be people that are probably steering into oncoming traffic if they're listening to the podcast while driving because they've got, 7 or 8 already. But, just do the math. Like, you've got to have 17. We're midway through the season now. Most teams have 17 quality players on the park each Supercoach week. And, if you start getting 6 or 7 eels, knights, seagulls, it just leaves you absolutely no room for things to go wrong in Origin. And we know that they always do go wrong in Origin.
For some of us, we have 17 quality scoring players in our squad. Not all of them end up on the park because you might bench someone like a Dream Buller while he scores 120 odd or whatever. And
but you're not better.
And play a Billy Smith for his 24 points or whatever he might have done the other week. But anyway, I digress. But look, I think 5 is probably about right. I do tend to think, because the problem is these guys, if they miss round 14, you might think, well, that's fine, I've got 2 trades to use, but you're not trading any of those 5 out because that defeats the purpose. Why would you have those guys? Because you want them to help you with round 16 and 19 or whatever. So you're holding those guys. They're good players, like your Hopgoods, your Dill Brown and all of those types of guys. Yeah, exactly. Like that, yeah. So that's where you've got to be really careful. And, as you talk about it, I've got 4 currently and I'm considering as one of my trades, maybe I'm looking at a Marju, but then I kind of think because of the fact that he doesn't play next round and I'm hoping to hold Harry Grant, I'm hoping to hold Nico and Cleary and Latrell, that's already 4 Origin players. If those guys don't back up and I've got another 5 guys on bye, I'm stuffed, right? Then I'm going to have to trade out one of those guys. Otherwise, I'm playing short next round. So it's a delicate balancing act. And, even the guys who I have, like Ben Murdoch-Masilla is getting another run next week. Like, please, I'd rather not, But, look, I think that's a good place to finish up as people probably want to, pull over to look at their teams to count their guys and buy next round. So please don't crash your cars. Any other final tips or tricks you want to throw out there for people rushing into maybe their first of these big buy rounds?
I think obviously most of us are planning to use 3 trades this week. They score the same in round 13 as round 16 as round 19. Don't steer too hard into having a great team in round 13 if it's going to kill you in 16 or 19. So just make sure, if you've got Supercoach Gold or Plus, for example, it takes you 10 seconds to quickly filter your team by who's playing in the various buy rounds. And if you look at round 16 and you've got 3 players, well, that should inform who you're trading out this week. Don't trade out guys that are playing 16 because you're really just going to cut your nose off to spite your face.
Yep, really good shout. So PSA, don't trade out Jacob Preston. He's going to be very valuable for the next 2 buy rounds. And he's, a weekly starter in the meantime anyway. All right, that's great advice. Good place to finish. Thanks again for jumping on and doing the double shift this round.
Anytime, mate.
Good luck with your final decisions. I'm still wrestling with my couple of trades. I'm really torn because I'm really, really hoping to hold Latrell Mitchell after our chat last night. I keep looking at round 14, 15, thinking I really want to have Latrell for those rounds.
Well, don't be that guy that convinces me to keep Latrell and then you move him on and then watch Latrell turn up back-to-back weeks. So that would be my only advice to you, mate. You don't want me in 3 years' time reminding you like I just did about Ryan Pappenhausen captaining in Magic Round. That time you moved Latrell on and it killed your Supercoach season.
That's a really, really good point. I think that might have just convinced me to stop looking at training at Latrell. So thank you for that, Joe.
You're welcome.
All right.
See you guys.
See you later.